We need to think about this. In the 1921 World Series, he pitched three complete scoreless games.
Wow.
I mean, three complete games without giving up an earned run. So he's three games, 27 innings, ERA of 0.00. And he pitched for the 27 Yankees, which many people say was certainly the greatest team of that era, of the greatest team of all time. Who knows? Wade Hoyt would say, don't start comparing people from the 20s to people. So here's a guy who began in the dead ball era and ended up broadcasting into the what we call the modern era, the very modern era. He was born in Brooklyn in 1899. And in 1915, he nearly had his hands amputated because he got they got infected. On a snowy night, a doctor and another two doctors came to the family house and did an operation no one had tried before, and it's you'd have to read the book to get all the details, and it worked. First of his many sort of unique experiences. Now, his dad was a very successful vaudeville guy until he ran afoul of the powers that be, and he ended up working for many years for Swift Meat Company as on the road. His mother was a very well-educated woman. He credits his parents, though it wasn't always easy, because they were constantly being badgered. This kid needs to go become a ball player, become a ball player, become a ball player. Their theory was, well, maybe not. Maybe he should go to college, you know. And if you read what he wrote, and this book is comprised of both interviews he did, and the transcripts were used verbatim. And things that he wrote for the Saturday Evening Post. He wrote for other publications. So it was put together by a guy named Tim Manners, who, as he says, is the DNA editor. His parents and grandfather are also writers. And it starts with Hoyt's early life. But here's some things I thought would be pretty interesting. 23 years career. 237 wins across 3,845 and two-thirds innings. One locker room brawl with Babe Ruth, who was actually a good friend of his, but they got into it. He was a vaudeville star who swapped dirty jokes with Mae West. He drank champagne with Al Capone. He bonded with Lou Gehrig, and you learn a lot about Lou Gehrig in this book, how the Yankees, the other players didn't like him. He was a college boy, went to Columbia. He was a straight arrow. He caught eels and his mother cooked them up, and they had fried eels in the clubhouse, and they all wanted to hate it, but they actually liked them, and they liked his mother. Hoyt's first wife, Dorothy, was parents owned a mortuary and funeral business, and he once picked up a body in Larchmont, New York, that had to be taken to Brooklyn, put it in the trunk of his car, pitched his game at Yankee Stadium, and then drove the body the rest of the way to Brooklyn. This is a guy who played for John McGraw, Miller Huggins, and Connie Mack, who got released by Horace Stoneham, who negotiated with Jacob Rupert. And in his time, you know, he played against Rogers Hornsby, Ty Cobb, Stan Musial. He played long enough to play against all these guys in his 23-year career. He played a lot in the minors when he was young, and they moved him around from place to place. It seems like McGraw was trying to hide him, and he'd be in some town for a while and another town somewhere else. And unfortunately for him, and he would admit this, he grew up at a time when baseball players were, shall we say, a little less urbane than they are today. They were a lot of carousing and hard partying and dubious moral decisions. And he wasn't basically made that way. Now, what happened, the way the book came about is it turned out that Tim Manners, who put all this together, was a friend of Chris Hoyt, who was Waite's son. And they had been for a number of years before he knew that Chris Hoyt was related to Waite Hoyt. Now, the great thing about this book, it's generally linear. So you see the story build. It's not completely linear. There are times when it flashes back. It begins, his baseball, love of baseball, really begins when he sneaks into Ebbets Field and Charlie Ebbets Jr. chases him. Maybe manages to get away. And then when he is released 25 years later on May 16th, 1938, at the end of his career, when the Dodgers let him go, and he realized he'd taken off his major league uniform for the last time. So it's basically that quarter century. Then when he leaves baseball and becomes an announcer for the Cincinnati Reds, he says that really saved his life, because if he stayed in New York, where he'd been drinking heavily and not eating well, he and his second wife, Ellen, had a long, fabulous marriage, though she kept saying he was in the House of Fame instead of the Hall of Fame. Left New York. He said when he got out to Ohio, he could be who he was. He didn't have to be Wade Hoyt, man about town, guy who pals with Babe Ruth, guy who runs around with this guy and that guy. Now, he said something. This is something that he wrote, which is in the prologue, in Tim Manor's prologue. The saddest day for someone who has played professional baseball for 20 years has got to be the day he is dismissed forever, carrying inside him the gnawing, biting knowledge that it is over. Never again will he accept the challenge of the game or continue to perpetuate the dream he so fantastically pierced together as an impressionable youngster. That's a really good example of the writing in this book. He was obviously a very, very smart guy. He cared about, and he really basically, you know, so the day he was out of high school, he was back, playing ball. And he talks about how, excuse me, when he signed his first contract with the Giants, he was 15. I surrendered to temptation, just like my high school English teacher, Miss Scoville, said I would. She called me in and told me, wait, I wish you would reconsider your decision. Professional baseball is a rugged game and not for a young man like you. She saw a very different future for me and wanted to help guide me there. You finish your schooling here, she said. I'll tutor you through the School of Journalism and you'll become a writer. Then she took a long, serious look at me, shook her head ever so slightly, and just about whispered, but I suppose the glamour has got you. He would go on to be a writer. He would also go on to be a successful painter. He became a Sunday painter, seriously, when he was broadcasting. And he would broadcast in the past tense.
Right, right. He would not, the typical call would be, Ruth pops it up, a right fielder comes in and makes the catch. But Hoyt would say, Ruth hit a fly ball to right field, and the right fielder came in and made the catch on it.
And I didn't understand until I read further in the book why that was the case, because he used to do recreations.
Oh, makes sense.
Yeah. And he famously did a recreation where he almost blew it and had to come back and undo what had happened. He said that a guy had walked in the winning run, and he goes, oh, no, he didn't walk. The umpire called it strike two. He's got to come back. The runner doesn't score because there was timeout by the umpire because he had to know all the rules and stuff.
Right.
But what I found so interesting is that the man's ability to analyze his own personality and his life in an unflinching way without running it. The only person in the book he basically says he never liked is Rogers Hornsby. And of course, if you read any baseball history, it doesn't appear that anybody liked Rogers Hornsby. I mean, he just, you know, not a great guy. He would always say, you know, so-and-so had this kind of a reputation, and he would talk about people he didn't get along with when he was playing. And he used to say, well, it was me. I was cocky. I thought I was the cock of the walk. Bob Shockey is one of those people who was his manager after Miller Huggins died. But he also talked about how he got tremendous advice and just refused to listen to it. He said Huggins was one of the guys, and he would say to him every once in a while, wait, what'd I tell you? Don't throw the first high, hard one upstairs, because, you know, you don't do that. You got to do this. But he really studied the game. He wanted to be a really smart pitcher. And they said he had a metronome windup. He was did everything so you could time him, and they had to teach him how to add sort of herky jerky things and the like. And of course, he played before the balk rule was the same as it is today. You used to be able to give a little shoulder shrug or sort of break your knee, And he talks about, you know, some of them being in great games he lost and saying, you know, I mean, I lost, but, you know, I was pitching for whatever there, and Ruth hit a home run to left, and, you know, I just, what could I say? It's just watch the ball leave the park. He's also a great social commentator because he had very, for his day, very progressive ideas. He was a Brooklyn kid, and he didn't really understand or like the rules about the race rules, and he was delighted to be able to call some of Jackie Robinson's early games and talk about how people today think that everybody at the ballpark was against Jackie. And he goes, it wasn't. There were really bad people, and they heckled him, and they were awful. He said, but I can tell you that there were owners and players and people on the street that when he came to Cincinnati rooted for him to do well. They wanted the Reds to win. Now, he wrapped up his career, as a longtime career with the Reds as a broadcaster. And he's in the Broadcasting Hall of Fame, too, as well as the broadcaster's wing of Cooperstown, as well as a player. What I would want people to get out of this book, it's called The Untold Journey of a Yankees Hero, is how much history we don't know about that era of baseball because nobody covered it. You know, the sports writers in those days, they looked down on the players. They didn't think they were much of anything. And Hoyt had all these great comebacks for writers that said stupid stuff. Of course, that doesn't endear you to them at all. And because they wanted to hang out with the players, they also didn't tell us what was going on either. And Hoyt does that sometimes. He'll say, you know, I remember being on a train in this city and we were going, he talked about how, well, a great example is that the Dodgers and the Yankees were both traveling by train to Philadelphia. They were on the same train. And the Yankees got off and went into the five-star hotel where the Yankees stayed. And how the Dodgers were staying many streets down on a much lower scale inn. He said, you know, I didn't realize it until I wasn't playing for the Yankees, and not everybody's living that high on the hog as a player. And he doesn't, the great thing I like is he talks about, you know, Mantle and Mays, and then he'll talk about the guys before him and say, many reasons you can't compare them. He said, no one ever fouled a bunt of mine back to the backstop. Why? Ball wouldn't go then.
No.
Balls were not as lively. He said, when's the last time he said, I don't ever remember seeing a ball land in the concrete part of a stadium and bounce 10 feet up in the air. You know, I mean, these are things I never would have thought of. I mean, we know about the change to baseball all the time, but how he knew that. And he tells a great story how Rogers Hornsby was late in his career, was out doing exhibitions and making money, showing people he could still hit. It turned out he was hitting juiced balls. So Hoyt's going to pitch against him in an old timers day game at Yankee Stadium. And they bring out Hornsby's balls, and he knows what's going on, and he replaces them with his own. Hornsby takes a big whack at a ball and just barely gets through the infield. Yeah, you know, these are stories we'd never know.
Right.
About any of these people. And he does, you know, really interesting stuff about Todd Cobb.
Well, I was just reading, too, that he was on the air doing a game when he learned that Babe Ruth had died.
Yes.
And then proceeded, as soon as the game wrapped up, to do about a two-hour tribute to Ruth right off the top of his head.
Right off the top of his head. And many people say that, and I believe there is a recording of it.
Wow.
People say it's just one of the most remarkable things. And the way he learned to be able to do that is the same way Scully did. You know, and I thought it was interesting the two books collided here. When Vince Scully would do Fordham football wrap-up, he didn't know how much time he was going to have. So he had to just go with things. Hoyt's first gig could have been 15 seconds or 15 minutes on the air after he left baseball. He did a wrap-up show for the Giants. And he said he knew nothing about timing. When he got on the air, they liked his voice. They liked his knowledge. But he kept not getting sponsors because he didn't know how to time. He didn't. You know, I remember you saying to me once, you could tell a radio guy to walk across the street and come back in 4 minutes. 4 minutes, they, you know, 3 minutes and 59 seconds, they come walking back in because you develop that sense of time. And he talked about how he had to learn to do that but that he then learned how he could spin a long yarn between pitches and you know the way Scully would do it.
Right.
He's really a remarkable guy, and his interests in life and in literature and in art is really really fantastic, and it goes you know basically year by year through his career, and the book began 40 years after he died. It began this 40 years after he died. There is a wonderful chapter just called "Me and the Babe," which is not very long. The turn of the 20s. And some great pictures, but I really think that you don't have to be a baseball fan, but you would really, really, really love this book. I just adored it.
And I love his introduction, Wait Hoyt's own words. "This memoir has been deduced from the way I have found life and the conditions of my chosen profession. They are individually mine. If somebody differs from me, why, that's all right. Let them have their opinions, but I will retain mine."
Absolutely. And when Manners found all these writings, Hoyt had apparently intended to do an autobiography and memoir, but never did it. In all the interviews that Hoyt's niece transcribed or had on transcriptions of and all that put together, I mean, it's seamless, and it doesn't read like a ghost-written book. You know, you can usually tell. Maybe not always Ron Borges, maybe, but some of the other. But it's a really, 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 and at times hysterically funny, a book just called Schoolboy, The Untold Journey of a Yankees Hero from Nebraska. And as George Will said about this book, for baseball fans, the University of Nebraska is a perennial MVP, most valuable publisher. This biography shows why. And he goes on to talk more about it, but you figure we've had so many good books on baseball from them, and this is just a great one.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading it. Thanks, Bruce.
You're going to really like this.
Love it. Sports Lit 101 here on a Wednesday.